gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. Dave Allen is my co-host today, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, August 12, 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you, and happy Monday to gold also. A great day for gold, an exciting day for me. I think most of our listeners, at least those who own gold and silver, and this should all be a warning to you, those of you who have not yet converted those paper dollars into some real money. Gold today was up $16.20, but we're still off the high. It was up another $7. So we were looking at, you know, a big $23 uptick today in gold. Settled back. That's okay. $16.20 at $1,513. Silver's up 12 cents today at $17.15. Platinum was down 2, $861. Palladium was up 13 at $1,437. Now, you know, it's just amazing. The dollar, Dave, is holding on to the level that we're seeing, 97.44, with everything else that's going on. It really, I mean, that number shocks me. You know, I mean, it should at least be in the 96. I mean, we should have at least some sort of a pullback. But so the U.S. dollar, but what else are people going to be going into? So they're buying the dollar. So
the crude oil. 0.06%.
Yeah. Crude oil today was up 25 cents at 54.75. And the paper markets today, down big. At one point, the Dow dropped over 450 points. They were able to bring it back down 1.5%, 391 points, 25,896. The NASDAQ was down 1.5%, 95.73 at 7,863. The S&P was down 1.25%. Almost at 2,882, down 36. 10-year yield, 1.64. I don't know how low that number is going to go. 0.09 to the downside. December futures, 1524. So that held in the futures contract for December. And you know, foreign markets, Asian and European markets were fairly calm overnight, considering everything that's going on. I mean, it's just like, holy smokes, waddle up to the bar, sit down and listen, because there's a whole lot of stuff that's going on. And the fear and greed index, what emotion is driving the market? We're at 24, which pushes us into extreme fear, but no panic. I mean, we're certainly not seeing that, and I'm not even sure. And you know what, Dave? I think what's happening is, I think they played with this trade war too long. You know, they were playing a game with one day on, one day off. Markets go up, markets go down. They did that how many times? Six times? Seven times? A lot.
Too many times.
Too many times. And I think now it doesn't really matter what you say. I don't think it's going to have any impact at all. And you know what? I think we're also to the point that if we did make a trade agreement, I don't think it would matter. Might matter to the farmers if they came in there and started buying some things. Maybe we'd get a temporary reprieve of the markets, but I don't think it would last because I think it started. I think that first domino might have been teetering, but I think this time it fell over. We'll just have to see how far the rest of the dominoes go, if there's any breaks you know, in the middle, or will it go all the way to the end? Will it knock all those dominoes over? So, you know, it certainly is an exciting time, dangerous time, exciting time, however you want to look at it. But I'm happy that gold is up today. And, of course, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Hong Kong, the violence that's going on there, the stagnant dollar, Dave. And you know what I think? I saw Jim Cramer. I'm no fan of his. But, you know, he says this Hong Kong is a bigger deal than the trade war. The one that I find the most interesting, I don't know on this scale of 1 to 10 where it would fall into as far being the most dangerous, but I think it's really interesting, is this trade war that's beginning between Japan and South Korea. because I'm thinking, well, what side is the U.S. going to take?
Well, right now, we're trying to be a mediary, it looks like.
Well,
it'll be difficult for us to take a side. Here's one where, you know, publicly we sit it out. Hopefully, the tweeting machine is turned off, and the diplomats and trade folks are talking behind the scenes to both sides. The last thing the U.S. needs right now, with the uncertainty in China and Russia, and closer North Korea, it's really the last thing that the economy, the politics, the country needs right now is a big trade war between two of our closest allies in the Far East.
Well, that might be fine and dandy that we're supposed to be standing sitting on the fence post, but we're not going to. I'll guarantee you Japan is not expecting the U.S. to stay on its fence post. So that's where it's going to come interesting, is because as much as the United States maybe might want to, I can see China. I'm sorry, I could see, we've got too many troops in South Korea. They're gonna. What type? I don't think we're gonna be able to. I know that's the optimate place we need to be, but both of these countries are I don't believe will be looking for the United States to remain neutral. And then you have to ask, what does that do to our relationships with them? We're getting more money from South Korea for our troops. Well, that's being renegotiated anyway, to see if we can, if they're going to pay more money for, our bases there, our military there, and so forth. But I think this trade deal between Japan and South Korea could be interesting, because I think one of those countries is going to force us into making a decision. And if we do stay on the fence post, they're going to be a little peeved. So it just depends on how far that goes, how much that is built, and so forth. But anyway, that's the one I find interesting. And like I said, it might not be dangerous. I don't know. But what else is going on, Dave?
Well, Goldman Sachs, our too big to fail friend, tongue in cheek. Says that these fears of an escalating trade war leading to a recession were increasing, that it no longer expected a trade deal between Washington and Beijing before next November's presidential election. Other analysts said that dovish central banks and negative debt yields around the globe were further supporting gold and silver. Gold prices rose as much as 4% last week and are up over 17% for the year. Silver gained over 1% early this morning, rose to $1,707 on its way up. It too is up over 4% this past week and has risen more than 10%, that is, since January 1st. Now, market focus is now going to be on the Fed's annual economic symposium at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, next week, August 22, 3, and 4, with investors seeking greater clarity on the future path of interest rates here in the States. Ironically, this year's theme of the symposium is challenges for monetary policy. Well, isn't that special? Traders this morning saw a 69% chance of a 25 basis point rate cut by the Fed at its September open market committee meeting.
What's interesting about their theme, challenges for monetary policy, they just came out of another meeting, a global meeting, that was discussing world monetary policy. That was just a couple of weeks ago. So now this is becoming a major theme of these, whether it be governments, whether it be these multinational corporations, and of course they work together anyway, Wall Streeters, something is going to change, ladies and gentlemen. They know they have to change their policies because they can't continue with status quo. because too many things have changed. It has caught up with them, and they're trying to protect. We're going to talk about this probably on a later program, but even today, the Federal Reserve officials came out saying that they're weighing whether to use a tool that could reduce the risk of a credit crunch and a downturn. The tool is known as a countercyclical capital buffer. It allows the Fed to require banks to hold more loss-absorbing capital should the economy show signs of overheating, or to keep less of it during bad economic times. The buffer applies generally to banks with more than $250 billion in assets. So you know which banks these are that they're going to be out there to, you know, protecting. This is a way of protecting them. You know, Morgan Chase, JP, Bank of America, Citigroup, the same ones over and over and over again. So we're going to dive into that a little bit more to see exactly what that means. But they're planning on it. You know, these meetings with challenges for monetary policy, they're planning on it. Banks are planning on it. Federal Reserve is planning on it. But the sad thing is, I don't think too many the citizens are planning on it, as we talked about on Friday's program, heading into James Corbett. You know, everybody thinks this is great. Everybody feels wealthy. Everybody feels like they're a genius, that they made these great decisions in their portfolios. And, you know, what can go wrong? They think of no risk, you know, until the risk hits them in their face, and then they lose 50, 60, 70% or all of it. And that's where we're at. Everything is, you know, everybody is living the dream, you know, thinking they're wealthy. As long as you have paper, ladies and gentlemen, all you have is promises of wealth. You don't have wealth, you have promises to pay. So if you want some real wealth and you want to protect you from that paper assets, well, you know where to go and you know who to call. And and everybody knows that this trade war is going to have a bigger impact on economic growth. I mean, certainly you hear everybody, you know, talk these things down and everything. Oh, well, it's not so bad and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. They're already beginning to lower their fourth quarter estimates for GDP to 1.8%. That's on the growth. You know, that's significant, Dave.
It's not 4%.
It's not 3%.
It's not 3%. It's not even 2%. Yeah, and it's the longer it goes on, particularly if it transitions to a currency war, which we'll talk about a little later on in the program, that could set the table for a much sooner recession than you know, the three quarters that some of the big guys are talking about right now.
Yeah, so you know, it's nothing's changed. Things just only got worse, Dave. The two big to fail banks added that financial conditions, policy uncertainty, business sentiment, and supply chain distribution will all contribute to lower than expected growth as a result of the trade war, Dave.
Yeah, they're looking for a drag on GDP this year of 0.6% due to the, you know, the trade war, including a 0.2% drag from the latest escalation last week. Now, you know, $300 billion is no chump change. Two-tenths of a percent drag could conceivably be more, depending on, you know, how coy China decides to be if, you know, the U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods, especially if they hit north of 10% and head toward 25. I have a feeling that Trump is going to keep the 25 in his hip pocket, start out at 10, and then, you know, perhaps work his way up. Again, depending on how the numbers turn out, particularly by, you know, the end of the first quarter next year, as primary election season is, you know, off and running, he may have to pull back or rethink that strategy and you know, get his team working on a solution sooner than later.
And, you know, the Treasury Department, it's not going to help. The Treasury Department came out today and said federal spending in July was $371 billion, up 23% from the same month. 23% from a year ago. What do you think they have to add on in order to keep the system going? I mean, it's not going to shrink, ladies and gentlemen.
As we said, as we've been saying since last year, after the first so-called spending agreement, you know, almost doubled estimates for budget deficits over the next 10 years, it seems like with each subsequent agreement among Congress and the White House, the debt just jumps up, you know, another level. And boy, it's hard to see. I mean, just all of these glaring signals just flashing brightly, you know, at U.S. consumers and businesses. In fact, the world, people are watching.
Well, they shouldn't just be watching. They need to be proactive, and they need to do things because it is coming our way. It's coming to everybody's way. I mean, this is what this is, you know. We knew it would be global. I mean, the world is – I've never seen the world so synchronized. And that was – so what are they going to do? They're going to drop it all. I mean, that's the only thing that they can do. They're going to drop it all, and they'll stabilize the currencies. That's what they have to do. That's the only choice they have. We just don't know how far they'll push it until we get to that point. And, you know.
And then it's going to take a Simone Biles-like triple flip, two-and-a-half twist, somersault, something magical to get us out of the mess that we'll be in by then.
It's called default. That's that's the magical tool they have. They'll default.
No, wait, I thought it was the vault.
The vault, the fault. But here's just a couple more interesting things. We'll be heading into a break. In July, Washington spent $53 billion on defense programs, up from $43 billion in the same month of 2018. Spending on Medicare rose to $66 billion. This is July, a month. $66 billion from $34 billion, though some of that increase was because of calendar adjustments, a Treasury official said. It just cracks me up. The numbers are big, ladies and gentlemen. How is your portfolio? Is it ready to sustain? Or is it ready to, is it prepared? 800-375-4188. We're prepared to take a break. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And I don't know, there's everything on special, ladies and gentlemen. The key thing is you got to make those decisions. You've got to think about converting those paper dollars into real gold. We're not financial planners. I can't tell you to sell all your stocks and convert it to gold. But it is my opinion. That's what I'd be doing. You know, it's at least make sure you balance your portfolio. Don't listen to these guys who tell you you should only have 5%, and then they sell you some other paper gold. Paper gold is paper. That's what you want to convert out of. I was reading an old time, it was to Bob Chapman, an old time question for On Air, and it was about gold mining shares, and the person was all upset because people were out there saying not to buy miners. Well, the problem with when people buy miners, they think they own gold. They think that it's going to perform in the same manner. And when you buy shares, when you buy mining stocks, you're not buying gold. You're buying the corporation and the management. And that's how they get you snagged. Because most people, or I should say a lot of people who just want the physical metal, end up going against their objective because they're believing that, you know, these are going to be outperforming gold, outperforming everything. You don't chase yields in these markets. Yes, we want something that has good, strong fundamentals. And yeah, they're going to do well. But it isn't gold. It isn't gold. It's paper. So keep that in mind when you're out there repositioning your portfolios and taking something that's a little less risky than some of these other paper investments. Have an equal amount of physical gold. You can't go wrong then. But if you have $500,000 or more and you have 5% of gold, like, what's the point? It's not going to protect you. Even 10% is not going to protect you the way it could or will. So, you know, be smart about it, ladies and gentlemen, and ask questions, because that's the only way you're going to learn. Then make your own decision. So, you know, if you have questions on various investments and so forth, and I'll tell you what, Dave, I was reading an article today. It was about people who are investing in the paper market, and they don't even know what they're investing in, because the symbol and the main example they gave was Ford. F-O-R-D. Most people buy that thinking it's they're buying Ford Motor Company. They're not. It's just, and I just thought to myself, are you kidding me? Are people investing and making those types of errors in their portfolios? And it just wasn't to the mom and pop investor. It was also to regular financial planners. And then they gave a whole bunch of various companies that people often mistake their ticker symbol for the company. That's how inexperienced investors are. I don't know. I just thought, you got to be kidding me. Read, ladies and gentlemen. Ask questions. And give us a call if you need those answers. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. You know, Dave, I think this is just amazing. We mentioned it briefly in the first segment of the program, where the Hong Kong International Airport, one of the world's busiest terminals, canceled all departures today. I mean, isn't that to me, I think this is a big deal.
Well, they canceled all departures.
All.
I mean, you know, it's the serious disruption because of these pro-democracy demonstrations. I mean, the numbers of, you know, Hong Kongers who are protesting is consistent. I mean, you know, some in the streets, you know, have been upwards of a million. But now, you know, you got 5,000 anti-government protesters at the airport for a fourth day today. That's some serious volatility. You know, some activists there had reportedly moved to the departure area where they caused disruption, according to the Hong Kong police, although the police declined to say if it would, you know, clear the anti-government demonstrators. That's where I think some of the long-term fear lies. I mean, certainly the short-term disruption is, you know, the cost of business for companies in Hong Kong flying elsewhere to conduct business and vice versa. You know, a statement, I don't know if this is by the police or the airport, said the traffic to the airport is very congested and the car park spaces at all car parks are full. This was this morning at the airport. Members of the public are advised not to come to the airport. Oops. It later advised all passengers to leave the terminal building as soon as possible. Said flights will resume at 6 a.m. Tuesday local time. I think Hong Kong's about 12 hours ahead of us. So that'll be interesting, you know. Just, I mean, I think you can check the news when you get up early this morning to check out the Perseid meteor showers, which are peaking tonight, tomorrow, and seeing if things have calmed down in Hong Kong.
Well, you know, Hong Kong's international is the eighth busiest airport in the world, and it handles over 72 million passengers a year. So,
yeah.
You know, I saw some of their demands, and it's just like there's no way that China's going to give in to them. So, you know, it could be also a very dangerous something that we need to track. Small business confidence, that dropped to a level not seen since 2017, Dave, matching the all-time low. Since they CNBC's been taking this survey, it's called Survey Monkey, began taking the pulse of Main Street in a quarterly survey 3 years ago. Business confidence is now lower than it was amid the major stock market sell-off of late 2018. And it equals the way entrepreneurs felt in late 2017. The reason that they give is the trade policy. A few business owners think they're better off now than they were the last time the confidence index was this low. But you know what, Dave? When you go back to 2017, it really wasn't that bad. You know,
it wasn't.
So it really wasn't that bad.
It wasn't. And after the tax cut bill was passed and signed by the president, small business owners in particular were quite optimistic.
The majority of small business owners still say that Mexico and China trade policies will not be a factor for their business. And again, I've shared this multiple times on this program in the last week, that speaking to business owners, that they're going to continue to buy as is because this stuff is so cheap from China. I mean, it doesn't matter how high the tariffs might be, it's still cheap. You know, they can't find prices cheaper. So I'm not sure what price it is that changes things, but one thing that is changing thing is bankruptcies. Bankruptcies are back, flashing warnings that, again, more Americans are knee-deep in debt. Total bankruptcy petitions nationwide by consumers and businesses are still below Great Recession levels, but the trend is upward. New York State's bankruptcy filings, for instance, have risen steadily the past 3 years. And more consumers nationwide are falling behind on their payments, filing for bankruptcies. We heard this about in the auto loans, and you know, we know the student loans and everything is getting to people, Dave.
Yeah, you know, this is interesting. Zach Hall, who's vice president of an anti-poverty program at the Food Bank of New York City, said, "We're seeing people using consumer debt as a way to make ends meet when they come here. And unmanageable debt is also forcing more companies to file for bankruptcy, triggering a wave of job cuts, with 43,000 job losses announced in the first 7 months of this year. It's almost 20% more than all bankruptcy-linked job cuts in all of 2018. You know, according to data released last week, U.S. bankruptcy filings surged by 3% from July over, you know, July of 2018. A total of 64,000-plus filings were reported for July, up from 62,200 the year before. And if this trend continues, this year's overall bankruptcy total is on pace to hit almost 800,000. It's a lot of people struggling.
Yes, it is. Well, you know, we have our weekly American Survival newsletter is going to be published after the program today, probably a couple hours later. It might be tomorrow morning. Got a little late today. That's my fault, ladies and gentlemen. But you can go to the website and subscribe. It's free. DGScoins.com, DGScoins.com. And yeah, we're even on Facebook at DGScoins, at DGScoins. And today, Dave, you wrote an article about gold in the context of a currency war. So would you like to tell us more?
Yeah, you know, Melody, as listeners know, the Washington-Beijing trade war took an unexpected turn last week as China let its fiat currency yuan drop sharply. U.S. responded by officially designating the country a currency manipulator. You know, that confrontation highlights the Trump administration's focus on weak foreign currencies and the corresponding strength of the dollar as a drag on the American economy. Now, investors are gaming out the prospect that the U.S. could actively intervene in the financial markets in a significant break from a decades-long commitment to free-floating currencies. In fact, the last time I believe the U.S. Intervened was in 1985, the so-called Plaza Accord, which we won't talk about here in the program, but is mentioned in a little bit more detail in the article. But, you know, even though President Trump might want a weaker dollar, engineering one is another story. It's difficult. Now, listeners understand that a weaker currency makes a country's exports cheaper for buyers overseas, giving a country a competitive advantage. For years, an artificially weak fiat yuan propped up China's growth as a manufacturing base for the rest of the world. The U.S. tariffs on imports of Chinese-made goods are meant to raise the price of those products once they land in the U.S., thus discouraging Americans from buying them.
But one way for China to respond is to weaken their currency and offset the impact of those tariffs. So that's kind of why China's allowed its closely controlled currency to depreciate sharply against the dollar last week. And it was taken as a sign that the trade war with the U.S. was getting worse. So a weaker dollar has other benefits too, Dave?
For sure, Melody. You know, it could also bolster corporate earnings, they say, which as a whole were much weaker in the second quarter than the recent past before that, with still a lot more companies yet to report. Almost 40% of the revenue of the biggest American corporations now comes from foreign countries. And a weaker dollar means those foreign sales make a bigger contribution to company bottom lines. Those higher earnings can help give the stock market a lift. Now, this isn't anything new, but in the past, governments have shied away from weakening their currencies, the U.S. included. That's in part because they're afraid it could also lead to an ugly bout of inflation. which traditionally has been seen as the big risk of a weak currency. These days, however, inflation around the world, at least reported by the respective governments, is incredibly low and shows little sign of rising, at least rising to the rate that eyeballs are going to be popping out.
Well, you know, we all know that these foreign exchange markets are a zero-sum game. That is, if China's currency weakens against the dollar, by definition, strengthens. So whether China deliberately lowers the value of its yuan or the euro is falling because traders are worried about the eurozone's growth, the ultimate result is that the dollar continues to get stronger. And stronger currencies tend to weaken a country's exports and encourage the purchase of foreign products, which leads to larger trade deficits. So are we at the point of actually devaluing the dollar?
Oh, well, I doubt it. But
or is it going to happen on its own? That's what I believe. It's just going to happen on its own.
Well, that's certainly a lot more likely than a conscious devaluation. But, you know, with Larry Kudlow advising the president, you know, I'm not sure. All bets are kind of off. I mean, currency markets are massive. I mean, every day more than $5 trillion changes hands in those markets, and more than $4 trillion of those trades, you know, it's 80%, involve the dollar. Now, China controls the yuan because it can use virtual infinite purchasing power of its central bank. You know, China's central bank, the People's Bank of China, publishes an official price for the currency every day. And that allows it a certain amount of trading around. The PBOC, as it's known as, has the ability to print yuan to weaken the currency if the exchange rate gets too high. It also has $3 trillion worth of reserves it can access to keep its currency from getting too weak. Doesn't work like that in the U.S., however. You know, we have a much smaller capacity to intervene in financial markets through the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Those are emergency funds controlled by the Secretary of the Treasury exclusively, you know, to intervene in the currency market. And there's only about $100 billion of buying power there these days.
You know, one can argue that the manipulation that took place last week represented China engaging in less manipulation in order to allow it to fall closer to its market-determined rate of 7 yuan per U.S. dollar.
Well, that's what some people are saying. I mean, the problem is the White House's manipulation charge focuses on more recent actions where different economic rationales apply. Take a look at the article when you get it in your inbox. Give us a call or email if you have any questions or comments about it.
And we're heading into a break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. That looks like a really good read for the article. Dave, we appreciate you taking the time out and putting that in there. And with things becoming so hectic, ladies and gentlemen, it's difficult to write about you know, Dave, it's kind of hard to write just with one thing when there's so much coming undone. But they're all connected. And again, it's that domino effect. And it is a contagion. And we are synchronized with all the government economies. So when one fails, they're all going to go. We just might be able to hang in there a little bit longer than most. But here's some interesting information. We have the Saudi Aramco says it's ready to go public. Isn't that worth trillions or billions? In the company's first ever conference call, Saudi Aramco's CFO told investors today that the company's ready to go public, but it's up to the owner, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The timing of the IPO itself, this is a shareholder's issue, and they will announce it depending on their perception of what would be the optimum market condition. Well, I'd say they better hurry up. They've been talking about this for a long time, haven't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, we talked about it on this program as, you know, seeing reports of an imminent IPO over a year ago.
Yeah, well, I know they've been planning on it because it took them years to figure out who was going to be handling it. So I'm not quite sure, I don't have it right in front of me exactly who is going to handle the IPO, but...
They haven't decided.
Oh, they haven't decided yet?
They certainly haven't made it public. I doubt they will until it's a go.
Yeah, that's true. But sources have said that the Saudi government, encouraged by the success of Aramco's $12 billion debt offering, would like to move its plans for the IPO forward, issue the stock in 2020. This is going to be the biggest, largest new issue ever, this offering, and represents just a small portion of the company's equity. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman would like to see Aramco valued at $2 trillion, about $500 billion more than bankers are currently estimating. You know, to be honest with you, Dave, this is what it's all about with the Saudis. I mean, that's a lot of money.
It's nice to be king.
And that's why they're getting the free pass. Yep. That's why they're getting the free passes that they've been getting.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That's why we're giving them, that's why we're selling them weapons. You know, that's why everything, all of our decisions, all the U.S. decisions based with Saudi Arabia recently, is all based on this.
That's why we're kissing their butt in the Yemen air war.
Yep.
But, you know, the company does face tough markets, you know, where oil prices are volatile and near the 2019 low. I mean, Brent crude futures were trading below 60 bucks a barrel and are down 18% over the past year. You know, at the same time, energy stocks have underperformed, with the S&P energy sector up just 1.7% year-to-date, the worst-performing sector and well behind the S&P 500's overall gain this year of about 16%. Now, the CFO of Aramco, he had a statement that said that the company has delivered strong and unmatched financial results despite lower oil prices and volatile market conditions. This is really a testament to our resilience. You know, the company earlier reported first half of the year net profits of, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, $47 billion. And that's down from $53 billion last year. These are net profits after tax. Free cash flow rose almost 7% to $38 billion. And, you know, it's that cash flow that some sources believe could help Aramco propel its valuation to that desired $2 trillion level. The company also announced a special dividend of $20 billion, noting its exceptionally strong performance last year.
Well, you know, my pet peeve, and I just mentioned it a few, Saudi Aramco, the Kingdom State Oil behemoth, they own 100% of the Port Arthur refinery, 100%. They're considered the crown jewel of the U.S. refinery system. They can this was 2 years ago. They can process 600,000 barrels of oil per day, making it the largest refinery in North America. They used to own 50%. Now they own 100%. So 100%. And again, follow the money. And it just gets disgusting after a while, Dave. You know, how can anybody make decent decisions without knowing the truth? I mean, how many people in this country actually know that Aramco owns the largest refinery in this country?
Well, greed and corruption breed more greed and corruption.
Yes.
I mean, I think for the large part, and, you know, God bless the everyday American investor, but for the large part, investors are just holding their nose. They're not even looking the other way. They might not know everything about it, but they know enough about it. And I think this Aramco IPO is going to be I think it's going to be immense. I think it's going to be immensely popular because of some of the reasons, you know, you mentioned. And, you know, I see, you know, the big investors, big pension funds just jumping on board with great big smiles, thinking they're going to, you know, just see their returns go sky high once, you know, the IPO becomes official.
In addition to when this was in 2017 when they took when they acquired full ownership, in addition to Port Arthur, they also have full ownership of 24 distribution terminals.
Where is Port Arthur, Valley? Does it Texas?
Yeah. Aramco also gets the exclusive right to sell Shell branded gasoline. So here's one way you don't have to support them. Don't buy Shell branded gasoline and diesel in Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Maryland, the eastern half of Texas, and the majority of Florida. So again, you can see, anyway, that's my pet peeve, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we're beholden to them because of our fiat currency. That's what it's all about also. And they have to sell their oil in dollars. And so that's how the system is run. So when we talk about draining the swamp, I have to chuckle. I just have to chuckle. But anyway, that's another story another day. Tell it. Right, Dave?
Beats crying.
Not if you have gold and it's rising the way it is and where we anticipate it to go. We'll be crying. Those will be happy tears.
Yeah, joy, yeah, tears
we'll
of
be
joy
happy
for
tears.
Sure.
Tell us about Argentina. I was surprised to see this. I mean, we certainly have past history. Argentina's had past history of their currency plummeting.
Yeah, well, their problems continue now. Argentina's peso and its government bonds sold off steeply today after the country's president, Mauricio Macri, performed poorly in primary elections. You know, Macri lost by a far greater margin than expected yesterday. Early official results showed, casting serious doubt over the incumbent's re-election chances in October. And just as a quick aside, I say yesterday, that's true. They like many other countries, vote on the weekends when it's convenient for voters. Argentina's peso shed nearly 25% of its value to around 59 per U.S. dollar shortly after trading open today. The peso had been at about 45 at its previous close. You know, the election result had earlier prompted Argentina's euro-denominated bond to fall almost 9 cents lower. The yield, which moves inversely to price, rose almost 3%. And the main Argentine stock market moved lower by 11% shortly after the trading opened. Hmm. Melody.
Does that have any other interesting...
Well, you know, the opposition ticket got 48% of the vote. McCree and his running mate got just 32%. You know, these primaries are seen as, you know, the key gauge for the first round of Argentina's presidential elections on October 27th. So I think there's a big concern about McCree's economic reforms being overturned should this Fernandez, I forget her first name, it's a he, Alberto Fernandez, I beg your pardon, his running mate is a woman. But the major concern about these hard-fought for economic reforms being overturned should the Fernandez ticket win in October, which, you know, now certainly seems like it's the case with that major vote differential. So not a good day for the peso. We'll see. There doesn't appear to be any... it looks like it's a, quote, peaceful transition in the offing. We'll see what happens between now and October and let the listeners know, Melody.
Mm. All right. We talked about this before, but I don't know if it was another country, but now the Danish, Denmark, which is, you know, the bank... I'm not quite sure how you pronounce that. Jyske?
Sounds good. It's close to Jyske. So let's stick Jyske.
Jyske Bank. It's the third largest bank in Denmark. They announced last week that it's going to offer the 10-year mortgages, offer 10-year mortgages at a rate of negative 0.5%. Another Danish bank, Nordea, they said they're going to begin offering a 20-year fixed-rate mortgage with 0% interest, as well as a 30-year mortgage at 0.5%. Dave, this kind of reminds me of, like, after the dot-com bubble, or maybe prior to all these big busts, you have all these auto manufacturers come out with all these zero interest rates.
Yeah.
You know, for a term, and this is kind of the same thing for your mortgage now, is zero rate. I mean, that's negative interest rates makes it sound like borrowers will be paid to take out a mortgage rather than pay the bank interest. The reality is just a little more complicated. With banking fees, borrowers could still end up owing money on the loan, not earning it. Plus, due to the short term of the loans offered by Jyske Bank, they aren't meant to finance an entire home purchase. They are intended to be supplemental loans that can be used for home repairs, upgrades, you know, I guess kind of like our, you know, our secondary, yeah.
Our home equity loans.
Home equity loans, right.
What have you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we do know that negative rates in general are a sign that, you know, banks and other lenders are, you know, wary of where the markets are headed. Some banks are willing to take a smaller loss now by offering these 0.5 or negative interest rates rather than risking borrowers taking out higher interest loans that they won't be able to pay back in the future. The negative rates show how scared investors are of the current situation in the financial markets, in this case Denmark, and that they expect it to take a very long time before things improve. Now, European countries first introduced negative rates more than 5 years ago as a shorter-term solution to jumpstart their economies as a stimulus. However, many are still relying on them 5 years later. In theory, negative rates incentivize businesses to borrow money, then invest it back into the economy. That's because when $1 enters the economy, it gets spent several times over.
We're just about out of time here. We just got a couple of minutes. I think what's really interesting is this Russian explosion is thought to be a test of a new hypersonic missile.
You want to take that?
No, go ahead. That's the guy's thing.
Well, I'm afraid that you're right, and that gives me the heebie-jeebies. Testosterone has a way of blowing up. Let's just hope it's not the world. You know, American intelligence officials are racing to understand a mysterious explosion last week that released radiation off the coast of northern Russia. Some believe it happened during the testing of a new type of nuclear-propelled cruise missile that we've talked about, tailed by Vladimir Putin as the centerpiece of Moscow's new arm race with the U.S. It's that hypersonic missile. American officials have said nothing publicly about the blast, possibly one of the worst nuclear accidents in that region since Chernobyl, with at least 7 people, including scientists, confirmed dead. Holy cow. But the Russian government's slow and secretive response has set off anxiety in nearby cities and towns and attracted the attention of analysts in Washington and Europe who believe the explosion may offer a glimpse of technological weaknesses in Russia's new arms program.
Well, you know, this happened just offshore of the Nanoska missile test site. It was followed by what nearby local officials initially reported was a spike in radiation in the atmosphere. We don't know how far that travels. And, again, this is the world that we live in, ladies and gentlemen. So when we do get to some point where there is a fight between nations, it isn't going to be very pretty. 800-375-4188. Thank you, Dave.
Hey, my pleasure, Melody.
Thank you, listeners. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe. Good night and God bless.